You're listening to a podcast of Mission Community Church. For sermon resources and to learn more about our church, visit mission68.org.
How's everybody doing? Doing good? Good. Well, good morning. My name's Joel, and I'm really glad you're here. If you're brand new for the first time, I'm one of the pastors on staff, and I'm so glad that you're here. We are kind of finishing. You came in kind of at the end of the movie. This is like the last scene of the movie today as we're concluding our series. I'm going to tell you more about that in a second. But before I do, I want to tell you, next week we're starting something brand new. And so if you are here for the first time, you're going to get the tail end of this, but we're starting something new next week, and it's called Once Upon a Time. It's a brand new series, and this is going to lead us all the way up to Easter. And here's why I'm telling you about it, is because next week we're going to start a series that it's about things that happen in actual history. And some of you, you know a skeptic. You know somebody who's skeptical, and maybe they lump everything that happens in the Bible in with stories that seem like fairy tales, things like Jonah and Noah, and they have problems with that, the historicity of that. They look at it and they just go, you know what? It's all in the same book, and they just throw it all away. And some of you, you know people like that, and they're not in church, or maybe things are not going well for them. And this is a perfect opportunity. I think this series is going to be incredibly helpful. And what we're going to talk about specifically in this series is some things that happen that we have multiple historical accounts of that happened in the life and times of Jesus, that happened once upon a time, and if they happened, they have consequential impact for our lives. They matter for our lives, not just on Sunday, but Monday through Saturday. And that's what we're going to be talking about over the next several weeks. So I want to let you know that that's happening next week. It's a perfect opportunity to invite somebody. Or if you came for the first time, you get to be on the beginning of something new next week. So I just wanted to alert you to that. Well, today, as I told you, we're concluding our series, Canteen and Compass. And we've been talking about faith. And we've been talking about the fact that God really wants just one specific thing from us, but that leads to a whole bunch of things that God wants for us. And the one thing that God wants from us is he wants us to trust him. He wants our faith, and he's really committed to helping us grow in our faith. And we've been talking about specific ways God helps us to grow in our faith in this series, because that's the thing that God's most interested in. We said the first week, that's the thing that astonished Jesus. And if you missed any of those weeks, you can watch all of those messages or listen to them at mission68.org/canteen compass. They're all there for free. They'll be there forever. As long as the internet exists, they'll be there for you if you want to watch them if you missed out on one of those weeks. What we've been talking about is these five catalysts. I alluded to this a minute. Five catalysts of faith. These are things that God seems to, he uses a lot of things, but over and over and over, repeatedly, I've seen these used. God uses these things to help us grow our faith in our lives. And we spent a week talking about each one of these. And today we're going to conclude our series by talking about pivotal circumstances. Those things that happen in our lives that we wouldn't necessarily choose, we didn't really orchestrate. They're more like things that happen to us. And like providential relationships that Ryan Gard talked about last week, these aren't really things that you can program your life for. These aren't things you can do. Practical teaching, that's something that you know, when you learn something in scriptures, you can put it into practice in your life. We talked about that. You can get involved and you can have a personal ministry. You can serve. You can do something that's ministry focused. You can get involved and volunteer in that way. Private disciplines, these are the things you do on your own. Prayer and fasting and giving, you can participate in those things. But providential relationships seem to be something that God does. He brings into our life. Pivotal circumstances seem to be things that come into our lives that make an impact in our life. And today, specifically, what we're going to talk about, you don't have to be a Christian to relate to this. You don't have to be religious. You don't have to be a person of faith. Most of us would look back in our lives, and that, whether it's your life or somebody else, you can point to an event or a circumstance that happened in your life or somebody you know, and it made a pivotal shift in their lives. In fact, you might call it a defining moment. And we've all had those defining moments in our lives. And you look back, and some of them were positive, some of them were negative. So for some of you, somebody came into your life and they were a mentor, they were a champion for you, or something happened to you where somebody started to breathe life into you, or maybe it was just a circumstance where you got married, or you had kids, or you got an opportunity you didn't really deserve, or you got a second chance, and something positive happened, and you look back. And if that hadn't happened, you wouldn't be where you are today. It was a defining moment. It led to a pivotal shift in your life. For others of us, we've experienced difficulties, painful experiences, tragedies. And you look back in your life, and they were defining moments, positive or negative. Whatever direction they sent you in life, something happened, and it led to a pivotal shift in your life. And your life went a different direction. And you look back and you say, that was a defining moment. And for most of us, we wouldn't be where we are today in life without those defining moments. Some of you, those of you who are religious, you've been Jesus followers, you've been a Jesus follower for a long time, and you look at life through that lens, you would call those not just defining moments, you'd call them divine moments, wouldn't you? In fact, some of you, this is what you would say. You would say you believe that God allowed this thing to happen to you, maybe even a negative thing. He would allow that to happen to you so that he could teach you something you just wouldn't have learned any other way. Some of you would say God orchestrated that to get your attention, to rescue you, to lead you in a new direction. That something happened in your life and you wouldn't have chosen it. You wouldn't wish it on anybody else. But as you look back in your life, when you think about that circumstance or those circumstances or that event, the truth is when that happened, a pivotal shift happened in your life and it led you in a new direction. Some of you, that's your story. And you wouldn't be in the room, you wouldn't be where you are in your faith today if that event hadn't happened. And you would say that was divine, that you feel like God brought that in your life. I was having a conversation last week with a guy, a new friend here at Mission. And he attends our church, and he was telling me about an intensely difficult experience he went through in his career. And he told me the story, but he way undersold the intense difficulty of this experience. Well, my wife was having a separate conversation on a separate day about the same events, and his wife gave her the fuller version of the story, which is the way it usually works with women, right? She gets the fuller version, and she tells me, hey, did you know about what happened? And I said, yeah, I'd heard that. And she goes, I can't believe that, da 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 da. And I was like, I didn't hear any of that. Like, I didn't know all that stuff. So I texted this guy, and I was like, hey, you kind of way undersold what happened. And I was almost in disbelief. In fact, I was almost in disbelief. I said to my wife, I can't believe they're still here. I can't believe they're still Jesus followers. I mean, I was just amazed. And when I texted him and I said, you know, man, that's unbelievable. I would love to hear it from your perspective someday. This is his response to me. He said, I'd love to tell you the story. Crazy times, but some of the best ever for me. I was listening to the story going, are you kidding me? This is intensely painful. If I had gone through that, I mean, it would be really difficult for me to trust God. He said, this is some of the best ever for me in terms of my personal spiritual development. Some of you can relate to that, that you went through something and you wouldn't wish it on anybody. You don't want to go through it again, but you wouldn't be where you are in terms of your faith today if you hadn't gone through that. But it didn't work that way for everybody. It doesn't work that way for everybody. In fact, some of you, you went through difficult things and seasons of your life, and it actually led you away from God. In fact, you wouldn't call them divine moments. You would call them doubting moments. That there were things that happened in your life that led you to doubt. They led you to ask big questions. You started to ask questions about who you could rely on and who you could trust in, whether God was really who he says he was, who the Bible says he is. And you began to ask such big questions because of what you were going through that it actually, again, this can happen in positive and negative experiences. We've all seen people led away from their faith and prosperity, you know, that you know, things started going well and they didn't need God anymore and they walked away from their faith. But more often than not, it happens in the really painful experiences that we ask questions that cause us to doubt our faith and trust in God. But some of you in this room, that's how you got here. You were doing life your own way. You were going your own direction. You were relying on yourself. And something happened that was out of your control. And it was so difficult and it was so painful that that's what God used to get your attention. Isn't that true? Some of you, that's exactly how you got here. God used a painful experience. In fact, C.S. Lewis says it this way. He said, pain insists upon being attended to. I mean, isn't it true that pain is a form of focus? That for most of us, that we're acutely aware of the things that are painful in our lives, whether physical, relational, emotional. Nobody needs to tell you that there's something painful in your life. You know. Pain insists upon being attended to. God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks to us in our consciences, but he shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And that's how some of you got to this place in your faith. One of the things I've discovered in over 20 plus years of ministry is there is an absolute relationship. There's an undeniable relationship between painful circumstances and faith. And when people go through intensely painful circumstances in life, one of two things happen. One of two responses come about from intensely difficult circumstances. People either run to God or they run away from God. Some of you have seen this. Some of you, that's your story. That in the midst of intensely personal painful circumstances, you ran away from God. Others of you, you ran toward God. And what makes the difference? Because on the other side of intensely painful circumstances in life, intensely difficult times in life, our faith will either deepen or it'll be destroyed. And I don't need to tell you stories about that. Many of you know the stories. You've seen it. You've seen it happen in your own life. And on the other side of a difficult circumstance, you saw someone's faith destroyed. Or you saw maybe your faith or somebody else's faith deepened in God because of what they went through. What makes the difference? I believe we're going to look at a story today. Then Jesus had this interaction. If you have your Bible with you, we're going to be in Matthew chapter 11. And I believe in this story, in Jesus' interaction with somebody that we all know his name, in this interaction, we find out what makes the difference. What makes the difference between people who run to God and people who run from God in the midst of really difficult circumstances? A bit of background, Jesus is about to have an interaction with John the Baptist. And many of you know John the Baptist. He's one of Jesus' first followers. In fact, he was actually the forerunner of Jesus. He came before Jesus and he was telling everybody that the Messiah was coming and this promised Messiah that they'd been waiting on and waiting on and waiting on. He was on his way. And then when Jesus showed up, he was baptizing and preaching one day and he said, "There he is. That's the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world, the Messiah, the promised one. That's him. That's Jesus." And everybody was like, "Oh, that's the guy." And so that's what kind of launched Jesus' ministry. Well, John went on continuing to preach about Jesus and tell people and go ahead of him to different places. And John had a run-in at one point with a king, with Herod. And in the midst of John's ministry, he was pretty well known. John had a lot of influence. And John, for whatever reason, he decided he wasn't going to allow Herod to get away with what he was getting away with because Herod had really wronged his half-brother. Herod had decided to take his half-brother's wife, Herodias was her name. Philip was his half-brother. He decided to take his half-brother Philip's wife, Herodias, to be his own. She was basically his mistress for a while. And in the middle of that, John the Baptist, for whatever reason, decided to take this personally on Philip's behalf. We don't know if they had a relationship, but he decided to speak out against Herod, which is not a good idea because Herod was actually employed by Rome. He wasn't voted in. I mean, the Jewish people were under Roman rule, and Rome decided who was going to rule that area. And so he was the king, and it didn't matter what anybody else thought. He was in charge, and speaking out against the king is an automatic death sentence. But here's the wild thing. Is Herod feared John the Baptist. And here's why he feared John the Baptist, because most of the Jewish people believed that John the Baptist was a holy man. He was some sort of prophet from God. And he knew that if he were to kill John the Baptist, that there could be a revolt among the Jewish people against him. And so Herod decides not to kill John the Baptist, and he just throws him away in some cell somewhere, and he puts him in jail. And John's rotting in jail, and he's wondering, you know, when his rescuers are going to come or when he's going to get out of jail, because what we find out is Jesus learns of John's circumstances and he just keeps on doing what he's doing. After finding out who John was related to Jesus in some ways, some sort of cousin relationship, he finds out his cousin, the one who went before him, one of his first followers, the one who's been preaching all about him, the one who kind of prepared the way for him, he's in jail, and Jesus learns of that information and just keeps on doing what he was doing with his ministry. And Matthew records what happens, because when John learns that, he's sort of baffled as to why Jesus doesn't care. And he sends a message to Jesus. It's really more of a question. And this is what he says. This is how Matthew records it. When John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, and I'll just add, more probably what the Messiah wasn't doing. He didn't come to rescue John. He wasn't doing anything about John being in prison. When he learned what the Messiah was doing, he sent his disciples. John sent his disciples, his close followers. He sent his disciples to ask him. Now check out this question. This is the one who identified Jesus as the one. He asked this question. Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? This is John the Baptist, and he, in the midst of his circumstances, looking at his circumstances, overwhelmed by where he is, trying to figure out how to reconcile this with this new kingdom that Jesus has come to develop, to lead, to overtake the world in his mind. He's going, wait, I'm John the Baptist. I mean, I have a role in this. I'm part of that team. How is it that I'm rotting in jail? And John's circumstances are beginning to hijack his faith, and it's making it difficult for him to trust in Jesus. And John the Baptist, the one who knew all the prophecies, he knew all the prophecies of Isaiah, he knew all the events surrounding Jesus's birth, and the events surrounding his birth. He was there when he baptized Jesus and the voice came out of heaven. "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased." John the Baptist is doubting because of the circumstances he's in the middle of. Now, I just gotta say this real quick. I don't know about you, but doesn't that make you feel better about yourself? I mean, that makes me feel better about me. It makes me feel better about my doubts. Because here's John the Baptist, and he's going, are you the one? Are you the one? And I imagine his followers, when he's sending them to go talk to Jesus, he's going, wait, they're going, wait. You're the one who told us he was the one. I mean, what do you mean, is he the one? No, just go ask him. I can't figure this out. I mean, I'm in the middle of this, and here's why. Because like John, isn't this true? We've all developed an internal script about how life should go. And in our heart and our mind, when we give our life to Jesus, when we put our faith in God, we automatically develop this internal script about how life should go for us, about how things should go, which is to say that when things are going well, when things are going according to our plan, when we're basically getting what we want out of life, everything's okay. But when life doesn't follow the script, when it doesn't follow the plan, when life deviates from the script, trusting becomes difficult, doesn't it? And it wasn't any different for John. As John was in the midst of his adversity, John's asking the same questions that you and I ask. And this is so encouraging for me. I don't know about you. This is so encouraging for me because John's asking, wait, are you really who you say you are? I mean, I know I'm the one who told everybody you are who you say you are, but I can't reconcile what I'm dealing with who you say you are. And are you really who you say you are? And if you are you for me? And if you're for me, where are you? I mean, why haven't you come? Why aren't you here? Why aren't you rescuing me? Why don't you do something about what I'm dealing with? And every single one of us can relate to John. Because when life takes a left turn, when it deviates from the script, we tend to doubt. It makes it difficult to trust. And we begin to ask, why? Why, God, where are you? What are you up to? And why don't you care about what I'm going through? And if you know your Bible, you know how Jesus responds. He's put out. He's angry. He makes an example of John. He rebukes him in front of everybody else. And he tells him he's going to rot in the jail cell, and he condemns him to hell forever, right? No. That's not what Jesus does. In fact, the thing is, I love Jesus' response. It's so compassionate. It's almost as if you say, I get it, John. And that is a very human response. It makes me feel normal because I feel like Jesus is saying, that's a very normal response. And look at how Jesus replies. He tells the disciples, the followers of John, he says, this is his close inner circle, the people who have accessibility to John. Go back and report to John what you hear and what you see. Go back and tell John. I know that all that John can really see is what he's in the midst of. I know he's in this difficult circumstance. As we said a minute ago, pain is a form of focus. And I know that the acute pain that John is feeling right now is all that he can focus on. But go lift John's head and help him see what's going on. Jesus gives them some examples. He says, go tell him that the blind receive sight, the lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cleansed. The deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is being proclaimed to the poor. Go back and tell John that everything that was prophesied about me is coming true. That everything he said I came to do, I'm doing. Go back and remind John. Go back and lift John's head and give him perspective. And then Jesus, he acknowledges something. He says something. He confesses something that's staggering. In fact, when I first saw this for the first time, it took my breath away. This is what Jesus said. He recognizes something for us. He says, blessed or blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. This is Jesus speaking. Blessed is anyone who doesn't stumble on account of me. This is Jesus acknowledging that at times in life, his activity or lack of activity in the world and in our lives might be destabilizing for our faith. It might cause us to stumble. And blessed is the person who doesn't try to define who I am, doesn't try to define whether I'm good, doesn't try to define whether I'm large and in charge and whether things are really moving forward the way I said they would move forward, who doesn't try to define that by what they're experiencing in the midst of their circumstances, because of what they thought I would do or wouldn't do to rescue, to redeem, to fix, to help. At times in your life, there are things that I'm gonna do, Jesus said,
that might cause you to stumble. And blessed is the person who doesn't allow their circumstances. John, just trust me. Blessed are you if you don't allow me to be defined by what you're going through, by what you're in the midst of. And then check this out. As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John, which you've all seen this happen before. Now that John's followers are gone, now Jesus is going to tell us the real story about John because they've all left now. And so now Jesus is going to, he's got a teaching moment and he's about to tell everybody something. And Jesus is about to use this moment in a powerful way, but it's not what you would expect. And this is what he says about John. He said, "This is the one about whom it is written, 'I will send my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' Truly, I tell you that among those born of women, there is not anyone risen, anyone greater than John the Baptist." Now, here's what I think Jesus' point was. This is not only normal, but I don't think less of you when you doubt in the midst of your circumstances. John the Baptist, Jesus, right after he's doubted, right after he's questioned whether Jesus is really the Son of God, whether he's really the Messiah, right after he's questioning that, the very one that was the forerunner, Jesus goes on record to say, "There's no one greater than John the Baptist." And I don't know about you, but that's super encouraging to me. That God's not looking down at me going, what's your problem? I mean, he is not thinking less of you because of what you're in the midst of. But he said, there's nobody greater. Yeah, I know he's doubting. I know he's in difficult circumstances, but here's what you need to know. Of people walking the earth, there's nobody greater than John the Baptist. And then, this is crazy. Some of you know what happens next in the story. Then, not too long later, John dies. Which is sort of like, huh? Like John the Baptist? Like his work's not done. Jesus is still on earth. I mean, how does John die? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. In fact, not only does John die, he was brutally murdered. Herod, I told you, he was not the nicest guy in the world. And on his birthday, actually, Herodias, this mistress that later became his woman that he stole from his half-brother, she had a daughter. We think it was his niece. And his daughter danced and performed at his birthday ceremony, and he was so pleased that he committed to give her whatever she wished. And at the prodding of her mother, she wishes for John the Baptist's head on a platter, and that's exactly what she got. And so John's brutally murdered, and his head is delivered to this niece. And we look at this situation. I look at this situation, and I think, wait, I don't understand. Why didn't Jesus rescue him? Why didn't Jesus intervene? I mean, God had sent earthquakes. He had sent angels to release people from prison before. Why not John? I mean, this is John the Baptist. I mean, he had raised Lazarus from the dead. He raised Jairus' daughter from the dead. Why not John? Why wouldn't he do the same thing for John? And the truth is we don't know why. We don't get an answer. And John dies, and seemingly even his own mother doesn't get an answer. And we're left with the question, why? Many were left in their disappointment in the midst of difficult circumstances that surrounded John's circumstances with this question. And the truth is that sometimes, we all experience this, sometimes God permits what he could prevent. That sometimes God allows things to happen that he could prevent. I believe that. I believe that just about anything that's ever happened in your life, God, if he wanted to, he could prevent those things from happening. But for some reason, God permits things that he could prevent. And similarly, God prevents things that he could permit. God prevents things from happening. You look into other people's lives, and they didn't have to go through what you went through. They actually were healed. Their situation was fixed. God seemed to intervene. And you've seen this happen. And sometimes it's so baffling because you're like, well, wait. I don't even understand. Like, they're not even walking with you, or at least they confess your name, but I know who they are Monday through Saturday, and they're not who they are when they come to church on the weekend. And the truth is you rescued them. Why did you do that? And here I am, I'm over here doing all this stuff and I'm doing the right thing and I'm trying to please you and I'm trying to be faithful and you're not doing anything. And oftentimes we're left with this question, why? Why, God? Why did you allow him to leave us? Why won't you bring her back? Why won't you heal them? Why can't we have a child like everybody else is able to have a child? Why did you let them die? Why? And oftentimes we can't reconcile that. And for many of us, we've experienced deep disappointment with God in the midst of those circumstances. But I love what Philip Yancey says about our disappointment with God. This is what Philip Yancey said. The only thing worse than disappointment with God is disappointment without God. And the truth is, you've all seen this. You've seen circumstances. You attended a funeral. You went when somebody, you've sat in a hospital room when somebody was really sick. You've walked with people who are not people of faith that are going through difficult circumstances or bankruptcy or divorce or abandonment. And you've peered into their lives and you thought, I don't know how anybody gets through that without faith. I don't know how anybody gets through that without God. I don't know how anybody gets through that without the community of faith around them. And as you've looked into people's lives, you've thought, I don't know how anybody gets through that without the peace that can be supplied by God, the peace that's promised by God in the midst of situations that aren't peaceful. They're incredibly disturbing. They're not peaceful at all. And God seems to reach into time and space. In the midst of circumstances, he could change. And it's almost as if he wraps his arms around us and carries us through. And we've all seen people that those circumstances caused them to move towards God in their faith. And many of us have seen people who've been led away from their faith. And here's what I think the difference is. I think there's two determining factors. I think the first one is the perspective we view it from. I think that's what Jesus was doing for John. He was saying to the people that had access to him, hey, go back to John and tell John, lift his head and say, hey, look at all the things that are happening around you. Do you see all the things that are going on? Do you see all the things that I'm doing? And when the truth is, for many of us, we've been in circumstances when somebody else lifted our head, when somebody else said, look at what's happening around you. Do you know what's going on around you? Do you know all the things that God's up to? Do you know the things that God's already blessed you with? When somebody else gave us perspective, is able to lift our head from the circumstances we're in the midst of, it helped us. It helped our faith. It helped us to move toward God and not away from God in the midst of our difficult circumstances. I learned a prayer years ago, and I use this often when I run into circumstances that I just can't reconcile. I pray this prayer, God, hey, give me the eyes, give me the perspective to see this as you see this, or give me the eyes to see this as you see this. I recently were doing this, and I was looking at these circumstances halfway around the world that many of you gave so generously to. Many of us, we care deeply about. I've read way too much about it, and I just can't reconcile it. And then I was emailing with a friend of mine who's on the ground over there, and he's doing ministry over there, and he responds back and he said, hey, thanks for your prayers, but don't feel sorry for us. You need to know that many of the Christians here are super encouraged because this persecution by ISIS has really opened doors incredibly for us to have conversations with people about Jesus. And it's amazing what's happening here. And there it was, in the midst of something that I just can't reconcile. Here's a friend who's lifting my head. He's going, no, you, here's what you need to understand. Let me give you some perspective about how God is using this. And oftentimes it's our perspective that rebuilds our faith, that re-energizes, it strengthens our faith, our trust in God, which is what God's really after. The other thing, the perspective we view it with and the people that we view it, the perspective we view it from and the people we view it with. Some of you, your story is, if so-and-so hadn't showed up when I was in the midst of those circumstances, if he hadn't come, if she hadn't come, if my small group hadn't come around me, I don't think I would be where I am today if they hadn't shown up in my life. And the people that showed up in the midst of the circumstances you were in helped give you perspective. And God used them to help you move toward him and not away from him, to help deepen your faith, instead of allowing those circumstances to destroy your faith. And some of you are in that. And my prayer for you is, God, surround them. So your prayer could be, God, surround me with people that will lead me back to you. People who I can lean on their faith when my faith is weak. And some of us, you could point back to somebody in your life. I know in my own circumstances, in my life, there was a season I went through when I lost my dad and I was 17 years old. My faith was just so destroyed.
And it was some people in my life that I could lean on their faith when my faith was weak that helped me through that. And the truth is, as I came out on the other side of that, and my faith was strengthened, and God has used that over and over in my life to strengthen my faith. James, the brother of Jesus, he says it this way. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. And the reason I believe James says consider it pure joy is because it never feels like pure joy, does it? When you're in the midst of deep trials and difficult circumstances, it never feels like joy. But here's what James says, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that in the testing of your faith, the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And some of us, that's our experience. That when you fought through something, and some of you, you're not even consider yourself religious, but you've been through difficult circumstances, and somehow on the other side, you were stronger. James is saying the same thing is true with faith. That when you go through difficult experiences and you move toward God instead of away from Him, on the other side of that, your faith actually grows because the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And then he says, let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. You see, these types of pivotal circumstances in our lives are the things that God uses to help us grow in our faith. Now, as we wrap up, I honestly don't know if I have the influence or if I have the credibility at this point to talk about this. But you know what I thought of when I thought about this circumstance? When I thought about this message and I was preparing, you know what I thought of? I thought about the fact that a little over a year ago, that this church ran into a huge pivotal circumstance. That many of you were here a little over a year ago, and your faith was shaken. Some of you, you began to ask big questions about God. Some of you, there was a person that was instrumental in you coming to faith, in you growing in your faith. And when the pivotal circumstances that happened for this church happened a little over a year ago, you began to ask some big questions. Some of you know people that decided they were gonna walk away from their faith because of what happened. In fact, not too long ago, I met a guy on the playground in my neighborhood who that was his story. And when that happened a little over a year ago, he just decided God couldn't be trusted. He had put his faith in somebody that failed him, and God couldn't be trusted anymore. And he allowed those circumstances to define his faith, and he doesn't go to church anywhere anymore. Wouldn't consider himself a person of faith. And some of you, you wrestled with the same things. You asked some of the same questions. But you know what? As I've gotten to know people at this church, as I've listened to your experience over the past year, do you know what I've heard? I've heard people talk about somebody in leadership who gave them a perspective. Maybe somebody on the board who tried to lift our heads and go, okay, we're going through a difficult time. We're going through difficult experiences, but Jesus is still on the throne and the kingdom is still moving forward. And there was a group of people that decided to give perspective about what was happening and encourage people to continue to put their faith and their trust in God, not any one person, not any one organization, but to continue to put their faith and trust in Jesus. And for some of you, that was the difference for you. For some of you, you told me stories about people you locked arms with. And you said, you know what? We're gonna get through this together. We're gonna work together. We're gonna trust God together in these circumstances. And you know, as I've listened to the stories, as I paid attention, as I watched over this past year, do you know what I saw? I saw a group of people who decided in some ways, but in other ways didn't have an option, that they were just gonna depend fully on Jesus in the midst of circumstances that they really had no other choice. Here's what I would say. I think that was a gift to this church. Do you know that one of the things I tell my pastor friends that are outside of our church, one of the things I'm most proud of is the way this church came through those circumstances, which is really unprecedented. Circumstances like this destroy faith communities. It bankrupts churches and organizations. That the way this church came through those circumstances and decided in the midst of that, that because they had no other option, we're gonna continue to trust Jesus in the midst of these circumstances. I am so proud. It's one of the things that caused my wife and I to wanna be a part of this community. I'm so proud of that. I'm so proud of you and the way God has really ministered to lots of other people outside of this place because of what they've seen in you. Here's what I would say. Don't you dare ever let anybody take that away from you. When your faith is fully in Jesus, and I want you to know my faith is fully in Jesus, fully depending on him more than anybody else, not just for what happens here, but what happens outside of here, for the way God uses you, for the way God uses us in this place and time in history. Don't you dare ever depend on anybody else. I don't want you to depend on me that way. I can't handle that. I'll just tell you that right now. I want our faith to be fully in Jesus always and trust in him above anything and anybody else. And in the midst of difficult circumstances, be it individually, be it for us corporately, in the days ahead, my prayer is that we would continue to put our faith in Jesus and that God would use our leadership, that God would use people around us to continue to give us perspective, that God would use people in our lives that we could lock arms with so that we would continue to trust in him, that we would be a people that when God returns, that we're found faithful as people that did exactly, that gave God exactly what he wanted from us, our trust in him and only in him. We're gonna conclude our service with a song. And I would love for you to respond however you wanted to. You can sit, you can listen, but I want you to allow these words to wash over you. Noelle's gonna conclude our service. She's gonna lead us in this song. And as she sings this song is about where our hope should be. This song is about, it's really a prayer for me of where our hope, where our body, where I would continue to be firmly rooted in, that we would have a faith that's solely and squarely dependent upon Jesus. He is the only one who ever conquered the grave on our behalf. He conquered sin and death, and Jesus is the one who deserves our faith and our trust, and he is the one we can put our hope in. So let me pray for you, and then we'll conclude our service. Let's pray together. God, thank you. Thank you in my life that over and over as I experience difficult circumstances, as I experience adversity, that you brought people into my life that gave me perspective, that you brought people into my life that helped me to see as you see, that helped me to see what was happening around me, that in the midst of my difficult circumstances, there were people that lifted me up, that lifted my head up. And they shifted my attention and my focus back on you, Jesus. God, I pray for somebody who's in the room today, who a past hurt, maybe something that happened long ago in their past, in their life, has really held them back from fully trusting in you. Maybe something that happened here at this place is holding them back. It's caused them to be just halfway in, to partly trust you. I pray in these next few minutes that you would give those people moments of healing, that you'd give them moments of faith where you would whisper into their heart and their life, you can trust me. I'm for you. I am who I said I am. And I will be with you regardless of what's going on. God, I just pray that we would be a people, we would be a community that would trust you like that. That people would marvel. As Jesus was astonished by faith, that people would marvel at our faith and what we do for you in our lives because we've determined that you can be trusted and we're gonna put all of our faith in you, Jesus. And I pray it in your name.